Welcome back to another episode of an Investor's Journey podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Barbera, and this is episode 35. For those of you that are just starting to listen to the podcast, the way it's broken down is the episodes with the numbers on them are actual tactics, strategies that we use or things that we do. They're actual things that you can follow to or take notes on. And everything else is just stuff that we are learning along the way and, you know, perhaps some deals that we've screwed up on or things we've learned on certain deals. So that way you understand kind of how the breakdown is. So this is episode 35, and I wanted to talk about how to prepare for the coming collapse. So this is something that we have a lot of conversations about this with a lot of investors, new and savvy, about what's going to happen in the market. So as we sit right now, we're in October of 2019, and the sky has been falling for the last, 5 years, right? So supposedly there was always a crash coming. Even after 2008, there's been a lot of speculations that that crash wasn't big enough. They didn't let the economy fall far enough. And there were put a lot of band-aids were put on our economy that is not allowing, that didn't allow things to kind of balance out how they should have. So every year is same things, you know, this year it's going to crash. Or since, 2015, I've been hearing, it's 18 months since 2015. This is not to say it's not going to happen. This is just kind of bringing to a point where a lot of people are trying to predict what's going to happen. And I think you can't do that accurately. This is just my opinions. And these are conversations that we have with John and a lot of other investors regularly. We haven't been in this position before. So a lot of people like to use historical data and everything to predict market cycles and all this. That doesn't work anymore in an economy, in a world economy, where governments can print as much money as they want whenever they want and kind of write things off when they want to and push things over here and push things over there and raise tariffs and lower tariffs. And, you know, they can manipulate the market in so many ways. And then also, they manipulate the things, the gauges they use to determine how strong or weak an economy is. So if you look at what it used to be gauged by, we don't have a strong economy. Unemployment is really high because one thing they don't count on is underemployment. Underemployment simply means people that are doing minimum wage jobs and can't sustain a lifestyle, right? Then they also don't account for the people that have completely dropped out of the workforce because they can no longer find jobs. Now, this is not to get political or anything like that, you know, why these people are working or not working. That's not the point. The point is that the gauges are always moving. They're always changing what they gauge inflation and growth by. I'll never forget, this was many years ago, an economist came out saying how we don't have inflation or anything because the new iPad was worth, it cost the same as a previous iPad. I mean, first of all, it's fucking insane that you're determining inflation by an iPad. Like, that has nothing to do with people buying food, paying for electricity, paying for rent. To say, oh, there's no inflation. The new iPad costs just the same as the last iPad cost when it came out. So there's no inflation. No, that's just capitalism. They're not going to raise the prices and stuff because, you know, it just makes sense. So that's just kind of to give you that base to go off of. So a lot of people that I come across are telling me, I'm just going to wait for the market to crash before I jump in. And my response to that is, I had a good friend that had a lot of money in the stock market. I'm talking about a ton of money. He pulled out in 2015 because he felt that 2016, 8 years later after the 2008 crash, we were going to have another crash. So he pulled all his money out in 2015. Go back to the Dow Jones Industrial Average on 2015 and look at where it was then and look at where it is now. I mean, this guy is kicking himself in the ass every single year after that because he's lost a tremendous amount of growth. You understand? So one thing that I can recommend is that you should not try to predict anything. What you need to do is make sure you are ready in case something happens that you can act accordingly. And we're going to cover three strategies that we are preparing ourselves with for if a collapse does happen, whenever it does happen, how we are going to stay in business. You understand? So I'm going to share those three strategies with you. But how likely are we to see a crash? Right? That's a big question. How likely is it that we're going to see a crash? A lot of people are speculating that we're going to see a crash in 2020 because it's a election year. I don't think that would happen because usually everything kind of slows down and waits to see what's going to happen in an election year. Who's going to get voted in, right? Who's going to take power and all these things. So usually when an election year happens, you see some volatility, but you're not going to see a crash, a tremendous crash. Again, this is speculation. We don't know what the hell is going to happen. Everything can come crumbling down tomorrow. There is no rhyme or reason for why it's going to take 18 months or 18 hours. Nobody knows. All right. All the biggest economists, they're always wrong. They keep missing the dial every freaking time. And now they just give you ranges. It could happen in the next 5 years. Okay. So that being said, when's the next crash likely to come? Who cares? Period. Who cares? Don't go by your investing strategies or anything that you're doing because maybe, possibly, someday it's going to crash. The only thing that this is going to hurt you is if you're doing a lot of speculative investing, that you are buying, hoping on the market going up for you to make some money, hoping on future growth for you to make some money. All of those things, I think, are very speculative. And could you be right? Of course. But you can also be very, very wrong. You understand? So speculation is something that you got to understand when you're doing. I'm not saying it's wrong or it's right. All I'm saying is that if you're speculating, you need to understand you're speculating and you need to understand there's a risk in speculating. What this means is we do speculation in our business as well, but what we do is kind of we'll speculate on this deal, but we also have these amount of deals that are making up for it. That this one can go to complete shit and we're still good. You understand? We can still take care of this one and take care of the rest of our business. So it's okay to speculate, but it cannot be the core of your business, a whole speculation. So that being said, I wanted to go over the three strategies that we are doing right now to perfect, to get ready for the coming collapse. Strategy number one. This is the thing that a lot of investors love doing. And I believe there are certain areas in the market that you do it in. And I don't like it all that much in today's economy, which is owner finance. In my opinion, owner finance should only be used when you have a property that you feel is no longer going to appreciate. You understand? So it's in an area, in a neighborhood that is just not going to appreciate. It's going to pretty much stay stagnant, right? It's going to stay flat for a while. So you're not going to have much appreciation and all that. And at that point, yes, the cash flow might be good, but if you're not getting the appreciation, you can get bigger cash flow by owner financing it. So in a bad economy, that's exactly where you want to be because prices are not going to be going up as they are now. Prices might stable off or they might take a dip, right? Either scenario, owner finances are great because now you sell that house for that price is locked in, guaranteed. You get an immense amount of cash flow, and you don't have to worry about ever doing anything to the property. And you don't care about appreciation or any of that because you don't have any, you know, there is no appreciation. We're going through a recession or a bear market or whatever it may be that's going to take a while for that to pick back up. So owner finance is a very, very good strategy for that. What we are doing right now is we are surrounding ourselves with the people that are really, really, really good at owner financing. If you have listened to any of our episodes, you are going to know that the biggest thing that we do in our business is partnerships. We are really, really good at partnering. And what this does is it allows me to not have to be a jack of all trades. It allows us to not have to know every single strategy at all given times, front to back. What it allows us to do is that when we get the opportunity to implement a strategy like that, I have a deep enough Rolodex or contacts list. Nobody uses Rolodexes anymore, but it's a figure of speech. But I have a big enough contacts list that I can go into and find who are the best people at this and bring them the deal. Hey, help me structure this. Let's partner. Whatever you want the split to be, I don't give a damn. I want to learn the tactics. I want to learn the strategy. I want to learn the ABCs of doing this. You understand? So that's exactly what we're doing right now. We've yet to do an owner finance because, again, in this market, to me, they make no sense. And in the areas of town where that makes sense, I don't like being in. So I haven't done them. I don't need to do them. But that doesn't mean that I'm not keeping an eye on them. That doesn't mean that I'm not that I don't understand what it is to do an owner finance, right? I understand the basic mechanics, the 20,000 foot view of it, but it doesn't mean that I know how to do it right now, but I know the people that do. And when the market shifts and this becomes a play, those are the people that I'm going to call on. So strategy number two, short sales. In a crashing market, there's going to be immense amounts of layoffs. When people get laid off, they can't afford to make their mortgage payments. And there are so many people right now buying houses, FHA, VA, that means with very little money down, that when shit hits the fan, those houses that they're buying for $250 are going to be worth maybe $220, $200, right? And these people still owe the $250. So that's when you implement a short sell. Now, we've done plenty of short sells. We are actually buying a house right now as a short sell. We should be closing within, I believe they said like two more months that we should be closing because the bank has to go do their thing and then we got to go through the title process, but it's all locked in. It's all ready to go. As soon as we close it, I'm going to walk you through that strategy, how we did it. But essentially what you want to do is if you should become an agent anyway, and I've done an episode before, I'm going to link below, as the benefits to becoming a real estate agent. As a real estate agent, you have a lot of benefits, especially when it comes time to short sales. And on a side note, kind of a tangent, I believe that the federal government and everybody, they're going to push for, if you want to be a wholesaler, pretty much any real estate transaction like that, you're going to have to be licensed. I think that's kind of where they're pushing everything towards. Whether you like it or not, I don't care. Neither should you. Stop being so emotional and just do what needs to get done. And if that's where you're pushing, adapt. If you don't adapt, I'll take whatever what you can't get. But if you're an agent, one thing that we do is we have a short sale company that we work with, and we refer all of our short sales to them. And once they have it and they're going through the short sale process and a short sale has been approved, we submit the first offer. Right? With all our documents, everything showing, you know, the scope of work, everything that we're going to do, we submit that first offer. So it kind of gives us first dibs at the property. And if nobody else submits any higher offers, usually the bank will counter or we'll do something along those lines and we'll get that property in. So this is a very helpful strategy because when the market tanks and the banks are left with these properties that are underwater, they need to liquidate it. Banks are not in the place of holding on to real estate. So backing up a little bit, for those of you that don't know what a short sell is, a short sell very simply is you owe $250,000 for your mortgage, is how much you owe on the house, but the house to sell it in today's market in its current condition is worth less than that. Whatever that may be, it's less, right? 240, 230, 200, whatever. You owe 250 and the house is actually worth less. So now the bank sells it short. That means that they sell it at a loss, You understand? So that is something that bank needs to be okay with. And that is something that you as the, well, the seller needs to show hardship, why they can't keep making the payments moving forward and all of that. And I mean, there's a whole process to it, but that's pretty much what a short sale is in a nutshell. And we've picked up some great properties through a short sale because there have been so many people that in even in today's market, they buy these KB homes, they buy all these houses with very little, no money down, whatever it is, no low credit. So they're pretty much selling these houses that are $200,000 to $300,000 to people that can't afford them. And then they get laid off or their job switches or whatever. And now they're sitting on a house that is worth less than what they owe. So short sale are very common. If I were you, I would start getting very familiarized with short sale. Get to know agents, people that are used to processing short sales, that they know how to go through the process. If you are an agent and you recommend it to another short sale agent, there are some people that will pay you up to 25% or more of whatever they sell it for, as whatever the listing fee is and all of that. So it could produce revenues in so many different ways. You understand? It doesn't have to be a distressed house as far as it being totaled and, you know, completely in need of rehab. It just has to be a house that's selling short, and somebody, if the price, let's say they owe $250 and it's worth $200, that means that somebody's gonna buy it at $200. So whoever buys it at $200, whatever that commission split is, they're gonna give you a percentage as well. So short sell is a great way of doing it because in a stagnant or in a falling economy, short sales are gonna become very, very, very popular, especially in regards to foreclosures. Another strategy, the third strategy, rentals. We work very closely with a property management company here in San Antonio called RentWorks. And we met with the owner a while back, and we were talking about all these investment properties and everything. He told us, he says, in a down market, rents typically do not fall. If you're staying within that bread and butter rental market of your city, so you're not renting too high to a small group of people, you're not renting too low to another small group of people. You're staying yourself in that middle, in that blue collar, that rent price point that any family would be able to afford, right? So if you can stay within that number, he had seen it for decades on. He had a lot of data on this. Where rents typically don't even fall, they actually go up. Because these people, most tenants, they can't afford to buy a house. The economy's in a recession, or it's in a downturn, or it's crashing. Banks are not lending. Lending requirements are tight. People don't have the jobs. Maybe they had to downsize. Whatever it is, they can't afford to buy a house. So they can afford to rent one. And if they're in a house where they're comfortable and they don't want to move, they're even more than okay with you raising the rent an extra $50 or $100, because where else are they going to go? They have no other options. You understand? So rentals are really, really good in that, in a down market. It's something that even if you have equity tied up in the property, as long as you don't sell your properties in a down market, you're not going to lose money. You only lose money when you sell, because once you sell, you realize your gains or your losses. So if you can hold on to it with a property that's cash flowing, you're going to be good. You're going to be able to wait out whatever the downturn is. But keep in mind, it needs to be cash flowing. You cannot be buying rental properties that are negative cash flow because you're hoping for appreciation. We go back to the first step, speculation. A lot of people are speculating. Don't speculate. Or if you are, make sure you have a whole group of properties over here that are going to make up for this speculative property. So if you're not speculating, I recommend having at least a $300 cash flow a month, $250 to $300 and up. And this is including property management or you managing it yourself. Either way, it needs to include that. What this is going to do is it's going to give you a $250 to $300 plus dollar a month cash flow for you to play with the rents. That's a big, big spread. Rents, at least in San Antonio, will not fall $300 a month. It's just not going to happen. You understand? If your property was renting for $1,300, it's not all of a sudden going to rent for $1,100 or $1,000. It might, if for whatever reason you're in a rush, you need to get it rented and things are taking too long, you might drop it $50 or $100 and you're still good. You understand? It's still cash flowing. It's still taking care of itself. That is the target. That is what exactly what you want to get. So kind of as a little recap, are we going to crash? Who knows? Who cares? Should you get into this real estate market? Yes, get into it at any time. Don't try to time the market. It doesn't matter when you get in. What matters is how you get in and how you stay in the market. It's not timing the market. It's time in the market. That is what you want to focus on, is how long you stay in the market. So if you want to jump in right now, where it's the hottest time, we're about to crash, it doesn't matter. You can get in right now and make smart decision and buy good investment properties. They're out there. We pick them up all the time. We are still buying a ton of properties in a hot market. We're not freaking out. We're not scared because we're buying good deals with great margins. They're out there. So if you're trying to time the market, you're never going to get in, or you're going to get in and start speculating and you're going to lose your ass. I guarantee you that. So don't time the market. Get educated and get in and stay in. Be smart about it. And then the three strategies: owner finance, short sales, and rentals. Those are the three things you want to focus on. Now, the marketing for these is most likely going to be foreclosure marketing, late mortgages, stuff like that. It's going to be people having distress. And you can go through many different ways of picking up subject two and stuff like that, which I'll link the episode that I did on subject twos as well below. So I hope you guys learned something. I hope you guys got some value out of this. Stop being afraid of the collapse. Stop being afraid of all this. Just be smart with how you invest. And if you have any questions, want to talk about any of these ideas, or want me to expand on anything further, comment below, send me an email, get in hold of me, and I will expand on whatever it is that you guys want to talk about. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Share this with anybody that's talking about the collapses, and let me know what you think, and I'll catch you guys on the next one.